Blog Talk Radio. National Empowerment Radio presents Let's Talk with Dr. Wendy. Real issues, real talk on Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Dr. Wendy, and thank you for joining me tonight. Tonight, I'm going to tell you we have a very, very, very interesting topic, very serious topic, topic in the news that the nation is talking about. And I'm just going to tell you, after this last occurrence in Tulsa, where this young man was killed by this insurance executive that was playing cop, I said, wow, I got to take a step back and talk about what's going on here with our black men. So before we get started, as I mentioned, I'm Dr. Wendy. Thank you for joining me. Tonight we are going to talk about being a black male in America, dealing with racism and the police. I appreciate all the comments that I've received after posting on Facebook and sending my message out. I do appreciate that. For those of you that are new to the process, this is an internet radio show. You can listen in by dialing in. My number is 347-326-9755. Or you can simply go to my webpage, which is blogtalkradio.com/ Let's Talk with Dr. Wendy. Follow the prompts, and it'll drop you straight into the show. So, enough of that. All right. Tonight is serious, and I want to delve straight in and start talking about this topic. I'll tell you, I have, over the last couple of weeks, if you follow me on Facebook, I have been just posting all the various stories that, the tragedies, I'll say, that have been happening here over the last several months, in that there's just been an influx of black men that being killed by the police. So I know a couple of weeks ago, several of you sent me a call or sent me a text saying, hey, you know, let's talk about this. What's going on? Is there a manhunt for the black man in the police department across the country? What is going on? So I know for those of you that receive my messaging, I'm serious. I am perplexed. I am saddened and hella annoyed with all the recent shootings here, the senseless shootings. Now, I'll tell you, I had a couple of people say, well, you know, these brothers, they doing this and that, and you know, child support and selling guns to a undercover cop. That was what occurred in Tulsa here a couple of weeks ago. And that's, I understand that, I get that. However, it's clear, ladies and gentlemen, it's very, very clear that these situations should have been handled differently. Period. There's no other way for me to put it. It should have been handled differently. Now, Walter Scott, that one. Wow, I had to do a double take. I received text messages and people were like, you see Walter Scott case, you see the Walter Scott case. And I'm like, no, you know, CNN usually hits me and I get all, you know, I have the app and I watch the news because that's what I do. And when I saw it, I said, oh, wow, this is just a lot for society to deal with when it comes to the police force. So I have a lot of comments here that I'm definitely going to share with my listeners. I also see a couple of you are already sitting in on my switchboard, which is great. I appreciate that because tonight, I'll tell you, we want to hear from you for sure about this particular topic. Now, I do want to share a couple of things with you before I have a couple of people join me here on the line. I went as far as getting some information and just I want you to hear just some excerpts because there are some people that are living under a rock, and they some of the cases they're not familiar with. So one in particular, before I have a friend of mine here join me on the line, I want you to hear this Tulsa case that just happened or hit the news a couple of days ago. I want to delve straight into that one because I know I actually had a couple of people text me and say, you know, what Tulsa case, what's going on? I haven't heard about that one. So let's just take a couple of seconds and let's just hear this last one. And I'm trying to keep track here, but I do believe that this is the most recent one where, interestingly enough, the gentleman that was volunteering for the police force, who is a retired executive insurance person, 73 years old. I'm just, again, I'm perplexed. So let's listen in.
I need to roll on your stomach. Now.
All right, you heard that. So that one there, that was just, that was interesting. Here you have and they have it all on tape because the police had the camera on and they got the guy in the car where he was selling the weapon to the undercover policeman. I mean, we see all those things. He hopped out, he ran. And here you have this gentleman, a 73-year-old man here who, like I mentioned earlier, he was a 73-year-old insurance company executive playing cop who turned himself in today. So he noted, let's see what his name is, the reserve deputy, Robert Bates, was charged Monday with a second-degree manslaughter in the Tulsa County District Attorney's Office, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, everyone's like, why is this guy out playing cop? And the thing that's so perplexing, I saw on the news today, is that he didn't mean to use his gun. He meant to pull his taser so he could tase the guy to calm him down, which I really am on the fence with that also, because from what I saw on the footage, they already had him down. Someone had their knee on his head. So I'm just, again, don't get it. But nevertheless, he pulled his gun instead of his taser, shot the guy by mistake is what he did. He shot the gentleman by mistake, which, first off, the man is 73 years old. I just don't understand why the hell he was out there in the first place. So the gentleman that was shot, Mr. Eric Harris, regardless of what he was doing illegally, shouldn't have died that way. So I'm getting some text messages here. If you're interested in calling in, have something to say, just simply dial in. My number is 347-326-9755. And please let me know. Just give me your first name and what city you're dialing in from. Now, if you're just listening in via phone, don't say anything, and that'll simply let me know that you're listening via your smartphone. So with that said, I have a lot to say. However, I see a couple of people on the switchboard. I'm simply going to say the last digits of your phone number, and then at that time, just simply let me know who you are. So with that said, Okay. Osceola, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, okay, okay. Man, thank you for joining me. I have not talked to you in years. It's really been a minute. I've been following you, and when I, you know, we met years ago. So when I saw that, you know, the things that you've done and doing in the community with black men and all these shootings and so on and so forth, I said, you know, let me see if this man, and I decided to do the show at the last minute because I normally have the show on Sunday. So I said, I'm doing a show tonight. Whoever can join me, but I want to talk right now. So with that said, thank you. I appreciate you doing this on such short notice.
Well, certainly. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Now, before we go, because I see a couple other people on the line, I want to get some information because you've been doing a lot since the last time we talked. And, you know, just knowing that you're in the community, you are working with the mayor's task force, dealing with the disparity in the community when it comes to the police and black men. So can you just give my listeners just some of the things that you're currently doing?
Certainly, Dr. Johnson, we're in the midst of a crisis, to be totally honest with you. I just finished meeting or convening with the board of directors this evening, and some of the things we were talking about was, number one, disproportionate minority contact, which is part of the Department of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention Act of 1974, was also revised in 1999 and 2002. What that does is it addresses the negative overrepresentation of minorities in the juvenile justice system. To date, African-American males make up about 61% of the nation's secure detention placements. In North Carolina, we spend about $8,414 on average to educate a child, but we will incarcerate that child for the same year at $135,000. And so when you look at the national landscape, African-American males are negatively overrepresented in just about every governmental institution. So it's not by coincidence. I call it the old South masquerading in a new dress. And what has happened is that under the Jim Crow era, you had public signs that said whites only or blacks or no colored allowed. Today, those same signs or that verbiage have been taken off the doorposts and embedded in public policy. And so the goal for myself as an advocate and as a grant writer is to address those racial disparities that negatively target our young black males. So I write grants, city grants, county grants, state grants, federal grants, and we use federal funding to address those issues at the grassroots level. So nonprofits actually come together. We identify what the needs are in our respective communities, and we bring coalitions to the table so that we can comprehensively plan to address the needs resident within the inner city. And so that's currently what I'm doing to date. Last year, we actually wrote 5 federal grants and brought in about $5.7 million to grassroots nonprofits. We are convening with the faith-based community, and also we are partnering with one of our local partners here at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. But our goal is to make sure that we're creating models that definitely help advance African-American males, because in reality they're becoming extinct. And so we need to come together collectively and identify this as a crisis.
Wow. Okay, man, that's incredible work. It really is. Now, these shootings here over the last several months, it's just disheartening. I just can't continue to express what the nation is going through every time we look up. I don't think here in the last year or so, 6 months have gone by, and we haven't had some form of tragedy dealing with an unarmed black man being gunned down by the police. So, you know, for me, you know, my question is, and I know I got some really interesting comments from a sentence that I put in my messaging is, you know, is this a new form of genocide? What in the heck is going on? So, you know, with your meetings that you're having, you know, what are the discussions? What's being said? Because I'm going to tell you, this last shooting in Tulsa, the nation is perplexed. And when I say this, I'm just getting my information from the news, CNN and things like that. People are just amazed that this 73-year-old man is running around playing cop, and you shoot a black man, regardless of what he was doing, by mistake. What kind of discussions are you having when you're sitting with city council and when you're talking about this travesty that the nation is dealing with when it comes to police and our black men?
Well, I'll be honest with you. As a matter of fact, we're scheduled to address the Mayor's Mentoring Alliance this week. And so we just finished a meeting with the Department of Juvenile Justice. And one of the things that I share in particular was that there is no amount of legislation that can change a racist heart. And that's just the reality of the matter. When it comes to these shootings, you're dealing with individuals that, I don't know how I can say this in any other terms, but to say that racism is alive and well in America. You're dealing with people of European descent that have owned African Americans. And so in my mind, I don't believe they will ever see African Americans as being their equals. They owned us at one time in history, have still not made a public apology for chattel slavery in this country. And so I believe that racism is a matter of the heart, and we can say that, you know, the Jim Crow era is over, chattel slavery is over, there's no more racism in America. That is just simply untrue. Racism is alive and well in America, and I do believe that blacks are still considered in the eyes of their European former slave owners as being property, as not being human. And I believe that when they take a life, it's easy for them to do so because they don't consider you to be equally human. And I really believe that. I really believe that wholeheartedly. So, again, if I don't see you as being a human, then I can justify taking your life and not feeling remorse for it because it's just like I put an animal to rest.
Wow. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I have a couple people here on the switchboard, and I'm, again, as I mentioned earlier, I'm simply going to say the last four digits of your phone number, and we want to hear from you. We want to hear what you have to say to add to tonight's conversation because, again, the trigger for me over these last couple of weeks, I've been closely following these shootings, and this last one here was just devastating. So here, let's see. The last four digits of this particular number is 3904. 3904. You are live on the line right now. You're on Let's Talk with Dr. Wendy. What's on your mind? Okay. I will take silence as a sign that they're simply listening. All right, next person I have here on the line, your number is 6388, 6388. What's on your mind? You're live on the show. Comments, thoughts, questions, or concerns? All right. Okay, well, I'm going to go. I have a lot of text messages here. I see all of that. You know, as we talk, I'm getting these messages coming through. And I just want to go over a couple of these before I go back to the switchboard and hear what people have to say. Okay, so here I got a couple of comments here with people saying that a lot of – they understand what we're saying, but a lot of black men put themselves in these situations, and we have to do a better job of educating our community on what they need to do when it comes to being pulled over by the police. We know that. Bear with me here. I'm reading this message. It's a little long. Black men know that driving while black is real, and it will continue to happen. However, there is a certain way you must act if you are in trouble, and running is not the answer. So, wow. So with that said, I don't have a name here. And ladies and gentlemen, if you decide to email me or text me, please give me your first name and let me know what city you are texting or emailing me from. So, you know, what's your take on that? There are two sides here, because I know I've talked to several people over the last several months about this, and there are some that are like, well, you know, he ran, or, well, you know, he shouldn't have been there. And there's just some that are not, they're not looking at this through the same lens that we are. So, you know, with that said, you know, I not only want to talk about the shootings tonight, I want to educate our young black men on what they should do when it comes to interacting with the police as well. So with all that said, Asiola, what's your take on that? Because you're in the trenches, you're dealing with the community and these black men. What's your take on that when you hear things like that?
Well, I do agree that to be forewarned is to be forearmed. I have a black son right now that's at Atlantic A&T University. And so I think about my son every evening when I lie down to go to bed. And I've educated my son on how to interact with law enforcement. You know, you're right, you don't run. You exercise, and I always tell my son, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, et cetera. And always tell my son not to be afraid to articulate himself, so they'll know that they're dealing with a young man that's educated. But the reality is, the fact that you're a black male, you already pose a threat. And that's sad to say, but it's the truth, because the way we are portrayed is we are portrayed as being the most criminalistic, unintelligent, irresponsible creature on the planet. That we're dangerous, we're a threat to society, and that's how we're perceived. In New Jersey, they had a conference a couple years ago, and the conference, now I want you to listen to this, this was the theme of the conference: black boys are bad, white boys are mad. So
what?
That was the theme of the conference. And
wow,
they were bringing groups together to have a conversation around race to deal with these perceptions. And those perceptions are accurate, because when you look at the public school system, which are predominantly white, when you look at our boys, black boys are looked at as being bad. They're looked at as being intimidating. And so anything they do deserves a punitive consequence. They get sent to the principal's office. They get sent to the resource officer. The resource officer files a petition. They have to go before a judge, et cetera, even for the smallest offenses, which is why you have the school-to-prison pipeline. White children, on the other hand, or white males, if they have an issue, they're seen as having emotional problems. They need to go to the guidance counselor. They need to see the social worker, because they're not bad or inherently evil or dangerous. They just have emotional problems, and they need a timeout, and they need someone to talk to. So it's the perception that we are a threat, that we are a danger to society, that we are a menace. And if that's the perception that you have of me, you're not going to engage me as though you want to have a conversation or you want to protect and serve me. Your goal is to do me harm, to kill me, to hurt me. So I could run, I could walk, but if your perception of me is that I pose a danger, I pose a threat, then you're going to engage me in that manner. So it's hard to have this conversation with black males when, just because you are a black male, you have the identifying characteristics that say you are a threat.
Well, so, you know, I want to, you mentioned your son, and, you know, you have a book out, and I definitely might have you on the show to talk about that as well, because all of this is in line with the direction that I'm going to go over the next couple of weeks. I'm getting messages here as you are talking about this, and a couple of people said, you know, you noted that you encourage your son to articulate so that law enforcement can see and hear that he is well spoken and educated, but they don't care about that. So they don't care. That's what they're saying. They don't care nothing about that. So what? He speaks well and is articulated. At the end of the day, they see a black male, a black man. It doesn't matter if he's articulate or not. Now, I'm going to say this. When I saw this message, the first thing, I don't know if, and this doesn't have much to do with it, but it does for me. One of my favorite movies is Crash, and I don't know if you've ever seen Crash with Terrence Howard in it. He was pulled over by the police, and
yeah.
He's on. Yeah, okay, you saw that, all right? So here's Terrence Howard, and, you know, although it was a movie, there was a lot of truth in that movie called Crash. It really was. I love that movie. So here, he got pulled over with his wife. This brother is an executive at, I said, a big movie company, and they pull him over. He's articulate. He gets out. He says, yes, ma'am, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir, no, sir, and all that. He did exactly what you said, but at the end of the day, it didn't matter. So I'm saying all that to say, what happens when a brother does all that and he's still given a hard time and he's just continued to be pushed and pushed and pushed to the edge? That this is what people are texting me. What do they do then?
Right.
Because that's what brothers are saying is what's happening, is that they are just being pushed and pushed and pushed to where they have to step outside of that line. They find themselves needing to step outside of that line. So what do you say to that?
And see, that's just it. You know, as I shared earlier, when I tell my son those things, I'm just trying to increase his odds. But as I stated,
wow,
you are naturally a threat just because you are a black male, and it's how you perceive. You are perceived as being a threat. You're perceived as being a danger to society, a menace to society. You're seen as jeopardizing community safety, et cetera. And so there's nothing that you can do to change a racist heart. If a person is a racist in their heart, you can send them to race relations. You can do all the professional development training you want to do. It does not matter. You can write into law every piece of legislation that you can think of. It does not matter. Nothing can change a racist heart but God. And so we have a group of racist people hiding behind badges that have no respect or regard for, no respect or regard for black life. And so we have to educate our young men about this. And I teach my son about racism all the time. And when you talk about the book, I tell my son, I say, son, you have to understand, and this is the truth, and I hope I'm not offending anybody listening to your show. I tell my son all the time, I said, you are a weapon of mass destruction just by virtue of what you carry in your boxer shorts. You have genetic material. You are the dominant genes. And white males specifically know that if the black male commingles with his white female, we could eradicate their race just by our genetic material. So we are a threat that must be annihilated. And they know this. And so they portray this picture that we are a danger, that we function cognitively on the level of a primate. Why? Because you want to keep your white women or your Southern belles as separate from the Negro as possible, because you know that if we come together, any child that's produced from that union will not be a white child. It will be black, in fact. And so I truly believe that all of this comes from a fear-based agenda. They fear us because they know that we are the dominant genes people on the planet. And we don't have to go to war. All we have to do is sleep with their women and we eradicate their race. And so, again, now that is part of the book, that everything that deals with racism is driven from a fear base. They fear us, and we don't have sense enough to recognize that they fear us. The reason they hate us is because they know innately that we are the dominant genes. There's no such thing as a white race. There is a race that has no color, that lacks pigment. They are color deficient, walking mutants. And I hate to say it like that, but it is the truth. Let's be factual. They lack melanin. They lack pigment. So they are a human deficiency. We, on the other hand, are dominant genes people. We have full lips. We have curly hair. All the things that are considered dominant, we possess. And we're hated
for
that.
Let me ask you this then. So, and this is the running theme that I'm seeing now, and the messaging that I'm seeing is, so people believe, people are buying into what you're saying. I'm getting a lot of I agree what you're talking about. However, got a couple of comments here noting that the white woman comment. Why the collaboration with the white woman? Why is that considered a threat? And that's one comment. As soon as you said that, got messages on that, okay, number one. and then number two, okay, along with that is, why is it looked upon, and when the black man partners with the white woman, that's something that is a threat to them? Why can't it be that they're threatened with the black family coming together, not with the black man partnering and with the white woman? That's one. And then number two is, I'm getting the running theme is, it sounds like our black men are not safe. So I'm going to stop right there, but I want you to hear this also, because I heard this clip from Representative Johnson that ran on CNN, I believe a couple days ago, and I want to play a clip of this. So just hold tight here. Here we go.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It feels like open season on black men in America, and I'm outraged. In fact, all Americans are at risk when bad actors in law enforcement use their guns instead of their heads. Despite bipartisan nationwide calls for action, and despite my bills to reform the broken grand jury process, hold police accountable, and end militarization, and despite my colleagues' bills to encourage body cameras, this Congress does nothing. No hearings, no blue ribbon commissions, no nothing. I would like unanimous consent to enter this list of people killed by the police into the record so my colleagues will no longer ignore this crisis. Mr. Speaker, here are just a few names of our colleagues and neighbors and relatives. Walter Scott from North Carolina.
Okay, so we're familiar with the Walter Scott case. He was just simply going to continue with or just go over a list of black men that have recently been killed. With that said, he opened up by saying, you know, the nation, we're in a crisis. And one would think that body cameras would be a given, that would be something that would be unanimous by state, but it's not. You have states that are fighting cameras. They don't want the police to wear cameras. And that's interesting. That's another show in itself. However, with that said, what do we do? Again, I wanted to have you on just basically on your background with the grants that you prepared for the various organizations that are grassroots organizations that are going into the community, wanting and looking to help our black men and prevent things like this from happening. What do we need to do to stop this, or can we? Can we actually make a shift? Can the police department make a shift and stop killing our unarmed? And the thing that's a travesty is our black men are unarmed. That's the thing that's perplexing. And I'm looking at these messages that I'm getting, and that's the running theme is, again, they're unarmed. They're unarmed. They're unarmed. So what do we do? What do we tell the mothers that are raising their sons in single-parent households? What do we tell couples? Because it doesn't matter if it's a single-parent household or if they have two parents. It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, when they get pulled over, they get pulled over. And nobody's asking them if they came from a single-parent household or if they have two parents. It don't matter. What do we need to do? Because I not only, again, want to talk about these cases, but I want to educate and help guide people, save their son, save their husband, save their friends. We have to do something because it is just getting progressively worse.
You know, it's funny that you say that, because as I'm listening to you, you're right. These gentlemen or these young men were unarmed. The Justice Department, the legal, you know, when you look at the Justice Department, when you look at the political process of the passing of the legislation, you know, these are the various recourses that we have here in this country. And when they fail us, what other recourse
do we have? We have none. So if a black child, an unarmed child, can be killed by a police officer and they're not held accountable for their actions, then what recourse do parents have? Now, of course, black people can get upset and they can march in the streets and they can protest, they can destroy their neighborhoods, et cetera, but that doesn't change anything. And that's one of the questions that baffles me is, what do you do in a situation when the recourses that are supposed to be at your disposal to ensure justice in your country doesn't work for you? What other recourse do you have? So the legal process has failed me. There is no justice. The Justice Department, the political process have all failed me. What recourse do I have? You're left with none because you're in a racist country. And I hate to say it that way, but the reality is when you look at the story about the in the book of Egypt about the Exodus, it says that there arose a Pharaoh who, because he was afraid of the slaves that was in his land, the Hebrews, he asked all the midwives, he sent out a decree and said, I want you to kill all the males. He wanted to kill all the male children because he feared that the slave race would outnumber the Egyptians. And rather than have them grow up to become strong and to overthrow their sovereignty and take over the throne, he said the only way we can keep them under subjection is we have to destroy the male children. And I believe it's the same thing today. You know, Michael Porter, African-American male, wrote a good book that every black parent should read. It's called Kill Them Before They Grow. And in Kill Them Before He Grow, he talks about a curriculum of genocide, that the goal is not to educate your child but to incarcerate your child. So it's the same strategy. Kill and destroy the black male, lest these emancipated slaves rise to prominence and compete at the table and compete for a seat at the table. And so if the legal system doesn't work for you, if the political process isn't willing to pass legislation to protect and hold these vigilantes accountable for their actions, then we have no recourse. What else can you do? And so that's a question that I pose to your other callers or your other listeners, because I would like to know. As a grassroots person, the best thing I can do, I bring funding to communities so that during those evening hours when youth are that youth have something to do, so a safety structure and supervision provided during those hours when they're left otherwise unsupervised. And so that's the best strategy that I have.
Okay. All right, ladies and gentlemen, man, I have a lot of other messages here. I'm just going to, I'm looking at the last round here before we close for the evening, but let me ask you this. I noted that, and my question, and I've been asking people at events and different meetings I've been going to when this topic comes up, is this a new form of genocide? What is your take on that? Am I being too extreme when I make that statement? What's your take on that?
I believe that genocide is embedded in every governmental institution in this country. Curriculums of I really.
All right, keep going.
Yeah. So genocide is something, whether it comes down to the foods we eat or to the foods that are in poor neighborhoods, to the educational system. I mean, when you look at it, everything in this country, policy-wise, is set up as a form of genocide to target African-American people. I really do believe that. And so whether it's the school-to-prison pipeline to keep the prison-industrial complex alive so that you get free slave labor, you know, that also is a form of genocide, whether it's the fact that you target youth who learn as kinesthetic and tactile learners, so you create these classroom models that were designed for European females so that when the kinesthetic learner or the kinesthetic child has to move or be energetic or learn by doing. He now is targeted as being ADHD or ADD or BED, and so now he has to be tested, sent out of mainstream classrooms to special ed, where there's a 70-some percent chance he won't return to mainstream. So now you just disqualified him from post-secondary education. So that's a form of genocide. I mean, when you look at it, just about every governmental institution in this country has created policies, even from immunizations. That's a form of genocide. And so the police now, acting upon their racist hearts, is doing nothing now than embodying the spirit of genocide that's translated across every agency in this country that was created by European slave masters.
Yeah, you.
Hello?
I agree. I agree with that. I agree with that 100%. That's why I said that. Because just looking, I went and I researched a list of black people, not just men, but black people that have been killed, going back, that have been killed by the police. And I actually sent that list out, put it on, and in my list, I put on Facebook, and the message that I sent out was an incomplete list. But if you do that research and you see that list, ladies and gentlemen, it is incredible. Now, keep in mind, the Tulsa story that we're hearing, Walter Scott, Trayvon Martin, all these are just the stories that we're hearing in the news. While the Walter Scotts and the Mr. Harrisons of the world are being shot by the police, there are 5 to 10 other men, unarmed men, being killed somewhere else as well that we're not even hearing anything about. So with that said, when I saw that list, I said, wow. I didn't even think about it like that until I saw the list. I said, this looks like another form of genocide to me. Now, here is what I have. I have a couple people that actually wanted to know, believe it or not, they wanted to know, so what is genocide? What are you saying? It's a form of what? What is genocide? In layman's terms, genocide is just simply the deliberate killing of a large group of people, period. I think that's the simplest way to put it.
Right.
And I'm going to say the deliberate strategic. I'm going to put the word strategic in there too. It's the deliberate, the strategic killing of a large group of people. And you mentioned earlier, just going talking about slavery, that it's all historical. And a lot of times, you know, I deal with different generations, and our younger generation today, I, as we all know, have absolutely no clue about history. And, you know, I know a little bit about it. I'm not a historian. However, historically, the system was designed, the white man created the slavery to break up the black family. I don't care what anybody says. And we're still dealing with all that today. Period. End of story. That is what we are doing. I mean, I don't, what was it? The book of, what was the last, Diana Ross's daughter was in it. What was it? I can't even think of it. It was on, and I know you would have watched it, Osceola. That's your thing.
It's Book of Negroes?
Book of Negroes. Bingo. That's it. Loved it. Loved the movie. I loved it. Loved it. I thought she was phenomenal in that movie. Great. If you haven't seen it, you definitely need to go back and go by demand, do whatever you need to do. It was on for 2-3 nights. This is actually probably the first time that I have actually sat and watched something chronicled like that. I didn't do Roots like that, didn't do anything else like that, but I sat down and I watched The Book of Negroes, and it was excellent. And every time I see something like this, the underlying message for me is that the white man was created to break up the black man, the black family, period. In addition to getting free labor, we understand all that, but at the end of the day, the goal was to pull the black man out of the family. And we're still dealing with the whole, and this is another radio show, but we're still dealing with single how single parent households where these women are trying to raise these men, boys to men. And that is impossible. That's another show I'm going to have as well. Somebody else wanted me to talk about that as well. That's going to be another show. But nevertheless, to your point, Osceola, is that's all I'm seeing now is with all these black men that are being killed. It's just pulling these black men from our families, pulling the black family apart again, just another form is my point in saying all of that.
You know, it's strange you say that because, you know, when I look at it, how do you empower a people who's still suffering from post-traumatic slavery disorder, but also historical amnesia? So we have intergenerational amnesia among us as a people. I often hear people say, you know, well, African Americans need to stop complaining. They need to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. And they talk about the other immigrants that came to this country while failing to mention that the other immigrants who came to this country came voluntarily. Also, they fail to mention that these other immigrants
who
come to this country come with their name. They come with their name, their religion, their culture intact. We don't know our names. We don't have a clue about our tribal affiliation. We don't have a culture, so we assimilate. And so we've been trained subliminally to hate black skin. That's why we play the dozens. Your mother's so black, you know, your hair's so nappy, because we've been trained to hate our black skin. Everything black is evil, even when you look at the dictionary. And so all of this contributes to the fact that we've been conditioned to hate black skin, which again is why we even kill each other, because we annihilate what we hate. And because you look like me and you wear black skin and I hate black skin, I kill you. And so it goes back to this whole thing we've identified with our captors. They call it the Stockholm Syndrome. We've identified with our captors. So now you have black people, and I know I'm going to offend some listeners now. We go to post-secondary institutions, and we become Greek, failing to realize that there's no such thing as an African Greek. Greeks are of European descent. So when you say, I'm Greek, no, you're not. You are an African. The Greeks stole the knowledge from the Alexandrian libraries and claimed it as their own. They're frauds. You are the true inheritors and producers of the knowledge. But we've been bamboozled. We've been hoodwinked. And that's what we have to do. We have to truly teach our sons who you are. The original people came from Africa. The original knowledge came from Africa. All mathematics, science, civilization, politics, all originated from people who looked like you, your ancestors. And so we have to start teaching our young men this. So that's not going to negate the fact they're still going to be targeted. They're still going to be profiled, but at least we can empower our young men in their thinking, and at least we can then try to curb some of the lives that are being taken by our own, because we're killing each other as well. I'm all for holding white people accountable for killing our young black males, but we have to hold our black males accountable for killing black males as well. So this is also an internal conversation while it's also an external assessment.
Mm-hmm. It is. It really is. Well, ladies and gentlemen, tonight our topic, being a black male in America, racism, and the police. Interesting dialogue, Osceola. You know, again, I knew there was a reason why I reached out to you today, although it's been a minute since we talked, but I'm telling you, just hearing your voice brings back the conversations that we've had, because you are a very deep brother. Yes,
well,
yes, you are. I do too, man. It's been a very, very long time. And, you know, as you know, I'm going to have you on the show again. I want to have you talk about your book, and I think that your book is going to also help educate family, single-parent households just in general on what they need to do to keep their young men out of the street. So, you know, I'm going to save that. I'm going to stop right there on that one, and I'm going to save that for the next show that you're on. But I just want to thank you because, again, everyone knows what's going on with these different shootings. I don't want to spend time talking about that. I wanted to spend time on educating the listeners on what they can do to try to help prevent some of this when it comes to our black men getting pulled over and different things happening. Because at the end of the day, you know, I got all these messages and people are, they're basically asking, you know, what can I educate my son on? How can I prevent this from happening, even if he just gets pulled over for a broken taillight, nothing's going on? Because things do happen that we obviously will never know anything, that what we won't know anything about. I just want to make sure that he's aware and is doing everything that he can to prevent it from happening. So knowing that that's been the running theme of all the messaging that I've gotten, because our black households are concerned about the black boys and black men that they have in them. They are afraid that when they leave, that they're not coming back because of some of the various simple occurrences that can occur with the police. So with that said, what advice and tips would you leave for my listeners when it comes to black men, racism, and the police?
The first thing I want to say is that not all police are racist. That's just first and foremost. We have a lot of cases that are being spotlighted and advertised, but you have a lot, just as under the Jim Crow era, you had abolitionists that walked and protested and marched with black folk as well. You know, the one thing I want to say to parents, you have to educate your children, and you have to educate them to know their rights and to know the law, but also educate them to, I tell my son, if you go off campus, you never walk off that campus by yourself. I don't care how comfortable or acclimated you think you are to Greensboro, North Carolina, I don't want you off that campus alone. And so I teach him to walk in groups. And I also teach him, if you encounter a police, you have a smartphone. Keep your phone on. And so if a police tells your son, you know, to turn the phone off, you know, let him know that you are a minor and that you would like to contact your parents. And so it's small things like that. But again, if you have a racist police officer and they really want to target your son or do your son some harm, then there is not much, to be honest with you, that you can do in that situation. And that's sad to say, but that's the reality in the world that we live in. So I would advise parents, if your children are minors, to keep them engaged in safe, structured, supervised activities and off the street. If they are on the streets, have them walk in groups and then have those groups use their smartphones for a reason. Have those phones on. Just like we have these stories where, you know, the police videotape the gentleman that was shot in the back, it was recorded. You know, so at least things like that can then hold those individuals accountable. And so those are all the strategies that I have currently, and I'm always soliciting from grassroots folk to give me additional strategies, and I share those in print, and I share those in meetings. So we have to start educating one another. If I have a suggestion, Dr. Johnson has a suggestion, we have to create forums where we can educate one another. There's no such thing in an environment like this, in this social climate, there are no real experts on how to deal with this type of issue. We have to come together collectively and do what is called employing collective intelligence, because it's going to take all of us to come to the table to address this issue.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you heard it. This was excellent, excellent dialogue tonight. I know there are some of you that are texting me right now saying, you didn't get my comment. You're right, I didn't. I do apologize. I can only get so much in the window of time that we have for the evening. However, I do appreciate you participating. So I am going to definitely have this topic again, only if it continues. I'm hoping that things start to dissipate and we will start to see, I'll say, a reduction with the number of black men, unarmed black men that are killed. I'm really hoping that that's going to happen here in the very near future. We will have a part two to this topic. I guarantee you we will, whether if it continues or if it dissipates. My overall objective with having these shows is to educate the community about what to do to prevent things that we can control, because I know I had a gentleman on a couple of months ago, and he talked about his neighbor's son that just did not respect authority and the police, and his mother was very concerned about him getting pulled over because he was real quick to just, he had a really bad temper, and, you know, that's another situation, but that's one thing that you don't want to do, right, wrong, or indifferent. As Osceola mentioned, yes, sir, no, sir, definitely helps your situation. So with that said, Osceola, you have a website or anything you want to leave for us before I end for tonight?
My website is actually imthatbrother.com, and that's I as in igloo, M as in Michael, the word that, T-H-A-T, brother, brother.com.
Okay, imthatbrother.com. And you know, that doesn't surprise me that your site says that. It so fits you and your personality. When I saw that, I said, man, there go Osceola. That's him. That is who he is and what he does. And I'll tell you, it's good to hear from you, Osceola, and I'll definitely keep in touch. And I plan on having you on the show several more times, if that works for you.
That does work for me. And let me say thank you for having me on the show. And also congratulations on not only starting but completing your doctoral studies. Much deserved.
Wow. Thank you. I appreciate that. I really do. We haven't even talked about that. I appreciate you saying that publicly. That means a lot. Thanks a lot. I appreciate that, Osceola. Really do. All right, my friend. I'll be in touch. We will talk soon. And you take care. And tell the family I said hello.
I certainly will. You have a great evening.
All right, you too. Good night. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you. Wow, great show tonight. Great, great, great show tonight. I have some things coming up I want to share with you. I know some of you are like, man, I hate you to get my comment in, but I apologize. I always appreciate your support. And just continue to follow me. We will definitely do part two to this show. I'm going to have Osceola on the show again, and we'll just continue our mission with educating and lifting the community up. All right, ladies and gentlemen, a couple of things here. Have a nightclub that I want to educate you about if you're in the Minnesota area. It is called The Boulevard. Friday nights at The Boulevard is really a big deal, ladies and gentlemen. It's in Bloomington. It is actually I know some of you, I mentioned it last time, and you had mentioned that is the Knights of Columbus, and you are actually correct. It is at the Knights of Columbus, but it's actually called The Boulevard on Friday nights. The address is 1114 West American Boulevard in Bloomington, Minnesota. I know I got some of you texting saying, well, where's the Boulevard sign? It's the Boulevard sign. The sign is the Knights of Columbus. The Boulevard is inside, just for clarity. So we're all on the same page, okay? If you are in the Minnesota area, please check out The Boulevard on Friday nights. Doors open at 9:30. You will have a nice R&B time. It's a great social lounge, so please check it out. All right, I'm closing out for tonight. I have a good friend of mine that has a new CD that's out. It's called Big Boy, and I am going to close. That's right, I'm going to close the show with my favorite single on the CD. His name is Jay Most. The CD is called Big Boy. Go online and Google him. He's everywhere. You put in Jay Most, you put in Big Boy, you can go on CD Baby and purchase it. It's an awesome CD. I'm going to close the show out tonight with my favorite single on the CD, which is titled Oh So Blessed. So, ladies and gentlemen, with that said, thank you for your support. Great dialogue, great questions tonight. Great, 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 great. Loved it. Please tune in next week. As a matter of fact, my next show is going to be on Sunday. I'm going to go back to Sunday. Just had a special show tonight because I had the bug and I wanted to talk, okay? So tune in on Sunday. As always, I will have another thought-provoking topic. Have a good week. Take care. Good night.
You are mine, all mine.